Welcome back to 1370 KGNO. It's a morning train wreck, and on the phone with us is Roger McBride Allen. He wrote a book, Mr. Lincoln's High-Tech War, and thought this would be a timely interview with Mr. Lincoln's birthday coming up Thursday. How are you this morning,
Very Roger? Well, thank you. Very well, thank you. Want to put in a plug, though, for my dad, though. I am merely the co-author with my father,
okay.
Thomas D. Allen.
Yeah, I read that. I was going to get to that. I noticed that you're mainly a sci-fi writer. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yes, okay. What made you write this book? Is it just with the high tech that Lincoln used back in that day to kind of like what you write about now?
Well, actually, no. I'd have to say it's simply that I've read a lot about the Civil War and is very interested in it. My father has done a series of books for the National Geographic. One that had come out before this was called George Washington's Spy Master. That they had done very well with that, and they basically wanted to do Abraham Lincoln Spy Master. But, of course, Abraham Lincoln wasn't a spy master. And Dad and I kicked around some ideas for an alternate approach to the book they wanted, and we came up with this, and Dad wanted me in on it since I had made a couple of the initial suggestions. And he and I have been looking for a chance to write a book together for years, and we had a great time doing it, and we want to do it again.
Okay, let's talk about some of the high-tech things that the Civil War brought to us.
Okay.
The telegraph, number one, which was probably, that was probably the most important thing, don't you?
Well, I would say a tie between the telegraph and the railroad. You know, fast communications and fast transportation, and they pretty much literally marched along with each other. The railroads were one of the first big users of the telegraph to control their own schedule, and the telegraphs literally followed along the rail lines. They were strung up alongside the rail lines. And, of course, there were telegraphs and there were railroads before the Civil War. The Civil War was the first war in which they played a part. They had been invented and gotten into common use in the peacetime years beforehand. And the Civil War was the first war in which they played a part.
Okay, now, Lincoln had testing grounds for all these weapons and everything, right, that he would have special tests run to try to get his soldiers fitted with the best equipment.
Yes, absolutely.
Was he the first one really to set aside money to start spending on this?
Well, that's actually one of the people who is deeply involved in the development of the rifled musket that was the big weapon used by the Union Army was a guy by the name of Jefferson Davis, who was the Secretary of War at the time the standard-issue musket they used was put into service. Lincoln was very much a hands-on president about weapons. He went down the Washington Navy Yard. He went down many times to observe tests. He sometimes actually pulled the trigger himself when they were demonstrating a new weapon or trying it out. There's a story in the book about him going out back of the White House with the inventor of the Spencer rifle, and he fires the seven-shot rifle and puts seven shots into the target. So it was a pretty good shot as well. He put a lot of effort into getting new weapons into the hands of the soldiers, but what he ran up against, and this is still a point of controversy, is there was a lot of resistance to new things because if you put a new weapon out there, all of a sudden you've got to supply the parts for it, you've got to supply the training for it, you've got to supply a new kind of ammunition. And supplying, if you had 14 new weapons deployed, all of a sudden you had 14 new kinds of ammunition you had to get, and you had to make sure the right bullets got to the right soldiers who were firing that gun. And the logistics of this became tremendously complicated. One of the accomplishments the Ordnance Office in Washington was very proud of is they got the number of kinds of ammunition for cannons down from 600 to 140. So you've got to keep track of 140 different kinds of ammunition. You can imagine in wartime how complex that was. So keeping it simple, not inventing new weapons because the ones you've got were good enough, that was the other strain that he had to deal with. and he was mostly pushing for the new ones, but the arguments for hanging on to what they had were fairly compelling.
Yeah, in your book, I haven't received your book. We talked about that before, but do you guys cover some of the weapons that weren't used that were brought to him that maybe later down the road they come into play?
Well, the wonderful thing about this book is there was so much material. We joked that we could have written the book twice, and in effect, we put the second book on the website, Mr. Lincoln's HighTechWar.com. We talk about a few of those there. Mostly, we've tried to focus on the weapons that did come into play. We talked briefly about such things as the coffee mill gun, which was sort of a relative of the Gatling gun. One of the things that, for example, with that gun is it was a gun, it was called the coffee mill gun because you turned the crank as you did in a coffee mill, and the bullets came out. It could fire just by turning the crank. It put out a lot of firepower, but it was the size of a small cannon, and no one was quite sure whether they should treat it as artillery or as an infantry weapon, and how could you get it to where it would do the most good, and what would you use it for? They didn't really figure out the tactics for using the new weapons, actually until after the war. And the coffee mill gun and the other ones tended to break down a lot, so that they weren't reliable enough. It just took time to develop all the new stuff.
Yeah, let's talk. Okay, he used surveillance balloons.
Yes.
Yeah, were they that effective?
Yes, they were. They absolutely were. There's a strange story. They were used in one of the early campaigns of the war, what's known as the Peninsular Campaign, and they were put up probably a couple of thousand feet or so behind the lines. The Confederates, it drove them crazy to see the balloons up there because they were being spied on constantly. Every time a balloon went up or down, everybody on the Confederate side opened up trying to shoot it down. Surprisingly enough, you'd think a gas bag sitting in the middle of the air would be the perfect target. None of them were ever shot down.
Really?
Yeah. They counted them after the war to make sure they still had them all. They did an inventory, and they were all accounted for. But you could see what the other side was doing, and they at times would have a telegraph key up in the balloon and were actually sending telegraph messages. Other times they simply would basically tie a message to a strip of cloth and drop it down and would flutter down to get the message. But they were getting what we would call today real-time intelligence of what the other side was doing. They could see the campfires at night. They could see a cloud of dust and estimate the number of soldiers who were moving by the size of the cloud of dust. They could see whether the soldiers were actually in the fortifications. And they played an important role. Unfortunately, the guy who was the commander down there, George McClellan, had an unfortunate habit of losing his battles. And my opinion, at least, is that the surveillance balloons stopped being used because they were associated with McClellan and the people who lost battles.
Yeah, because I saw on the History Channel was kind of going over some of that, and they said McClellan had the tendency to run away from battles even when he had them outnumbered.
He's a mysterious figure.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by him because I just don't understand him. He was a tremendously gifted organizer, and he could get all his guys in exactly where they wanted, and then he couldn't run a battle. And the troops loved him, and he was constantly being convincing himself that the Confederates had twice as many troops as he did, when most of the time they had half as many troops as he did.
Yeah, that's what I said. So how did on these balloons, now they had a camera up in them?
Oh, no, not at all. The one of the things that is very surprising is that the in the Civil War, the photography simply wasn't up to the job of being any use militarily. There wasn't any way to get a camera up there and take a picture and process it to have an image in any sort of rapid way. They would draw a map, or they would send a telegraph message, or they would write a note and throw it over the side of the balloon. Or the observer in the balloon would be hauled down, and he'd hop out of the balloon. And at one point, the observer, a man by the name of Thaddeus Lowe, hops on a horse and gallops off to the general and says, "They're over there, watch out." And there's some argument that he perhaps saved an army by doing that.
Yeah, you know, and how did they pick which guy went up in the balloon? That's what, because, you know, that's got to be kind of like the first guys that went to the moon. There's got to be a little bit of fear factor there.
Well, and that is probably another factor in why they didn't use them much in the later part of the year. The balloon guys were literally showmen. They were guys who were civilians before the war who came, Thaddeus Lowe brought his balloon to Washington, floated it up on the mall in between the Capitol and the White House, ran a telegraph down, and as a publicity stunt, sent the first message from a telegraph from a balloon in the middle of the air and sent it to the White House. It was a promotional effort. And the balloons were gaudy, they were elaborate, they were funny gadgets. The guys before the war had been doing stunts with them, and they weren't taken seriously. But for the most part, the guys who went up in the balloons were the guys who had come to the Army to sell them on balloons.
So that's how they got them, okay.
Right.
Because I'm wondering, you know, that's one of those, I wonder if that first deal, don't volunteer for anything if you're in the Army.
Unfortunately, we couldn't get all of it in the story. The Confederates did their best to get a balloon up, and they essentially got a guy to volunteer and then told him what he was volunteering for. And their balloon wasn't in anywhere near as advanced as the Union ones for various reasons. He went up, and overstating it just a little bit, the string broke. He was being held down by a rope. The rope broke, and all of a sudden he's floating away over the enemy lines. And he had quite a few adventures before he managed to crash safely and get back into port. And his reward was that he got to go up in the balloon again.
Visiting here with Roger McBride Allen, him and his father wrote a book, Mr. Lincoln's High-Tech War. What's probably the most unusual high-tech instrument that the Union Army had?
Oh, boy, that's a good one.
I'm doing pretty good without prep, huh?
You're doing very well indeed. I would say it's not the surprise answer, but I think it's the straightforward one. The ironclad ship. That was the one thing that wasn't really thought of when the war started. Most of the other high-tech stuff had existed before the war. The ironclad ship did not. And the ship had several important features. One of them, of course, was it was ironclad. A conventional cannonball would simply bounce off it. The other was it had a turret, which meant that you could turn the turret independently of the ship, aim the gun independently of the ship. Prior to that time, you've seen the old movies where there's a sailing ship and it's got the guns alongside.
Yeah.
And you would have to basically aim the guns by aiming the entire ship, and you have to aim the ship 90 degrees away from where you're shooting it, because, of course, if you're going north, the guns are pointing east and west, and so you've got to judge that and fire all the guns at once with the broadside. And up until the Monitor, the first Union ironclad, that was the way everyone fought a naval ship. That was the way you worked it. All of a sudden, you could be sailing along going north. You could fire your gun north, south, east, or west, independent of the way the ship was moving. And that was a tremendous change in tactics.
Alrighty.
That changed everything about naval warfare.
Okay, well, Roger, I know you got to get out of here, but, hey, I appreciate you sitting in with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Let me just put in a quick plug for the website.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Lincoln's HighTechWar.com or HighTechCivilWar.com. Either one will get you to the website.
Okay, and where is your book available?
Well, it should be, as they say, fine bookstores
everywhere.
It's available online at all the online booksellers, and you'll enjoy it when you get it.
All righty. Well, hey, have a good day, sir, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be back with more 1370 KGNO.
Winter weather. It's hard on oil, which can be hard on your engine, which can be hard on you if it all breaks down. So don't put off an oil change and get stuck this winter. Go to Advance Auto Parts. They got 5 quarts of Valvoline conventional motor oil and a Purolator Premium Plus oil filter for only $15.99. And an air filter to help save some gas, and you're good to go.